9 degrees. I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This week, New Hampshire voters heard some stark contrasts in the candidates competing for the state's highest offices. Over 3 days of live debates on NHPR, in partnership with the New Hampshire Business and Industry Association, the union leader, and NHPTV, the contenders for Congress and governor disagreed on issues ranging from taxes to health care to education to energy. And underlining those policy differences, they offered different visions of where they'd like to take our state and our country. Republican candidates said Democrats would hinder prosperity through higher taxes and more regulation, while the Democratic hopefuls said Republicans were undermining public investments like education and health care, which they said create a healthy economic environment. Today in The Exchange, what we learned from these forums, the ideas and philosophies presented, and where these campaigns go from here. Let's hear from you, too. If you listened to these debates, what was the big takeaway for you? What issues jumped out at you as the most important, and what did you learn about these candidates? The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. With me in studio is Mike Cody, business editor at the Union Leader and a panelist for all three of our debates. And Mike, nice to see you. It was a long haul, and here we are.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Josh Rogers, State House reporter for NHPR. And Josh, thank you also for taking the time this morning.
Good to be here, Laura.
Well, and gentlemen, I'll start with you, Mike, and we'll go into the individual races in a minute. But overall, Mike, what's the big picture that emerges from these three forums?
Well, I think we certainly saw it with the gubernatorial debate yesterday. We saw the stark differences in philosophy between the two candidates and between the two parties. I think it was that particular debate was very civil, but I think you really saw the differences between the two parties in very traditional ways. I think if you were on the fence, you'd have a hard time after watching that debate because they both made really good points about what we need to do in this state, from improving social services to creating a good business climate to make New Hampshire attractive for big companies to come here.
And just remind us, Mike, those traditional philosophical lines that we heard all 3 days, really.
Well, I think that with Democrats and in the governor's house for all this time, you think just the idea of taxes coming, you kind of wonder. I grew up here, and I haven't lived here for a long time. But you get the sense, okay, maybe now we'll be able to start talking about a sales tax, and of course that's death for any candidate in this state, and it has been since I was old enough to walk.
So, and we should say that Mike Cody moved back to New Hampshire just recently after living in Colorado for many years. And I'll ask you about that in a minute, Mike. But Josh, to you too, Mike touched on it. The big sort of traditional fault lines between Democrats and Republicans, we really heard that over the last 3 days.
I mean, certainly the role of government, certainly Republicans focused a lot on taxes and spending. Democrats focused a lot on the role the government might play in creating an atmosphere for prosperity, be that in investment in higher education was something we heard a lot about, how to handle energy policy, at least in terms of the federal races that were part of the debate. Government investment versus a competitive environment, certainly, broadly speaking, Republicans feel, and tradition would bear this out, that they're on their have a stronger footing when the argument can be about taxes and spending. Certainly in the Democratic debate, in the gubernatorial debate, we saw that, Maggie Hassan and the Democrats are looking to put Ovid LaMontagne on the defensive about social issues. And certainly the New Hampshire electorate is probably more in line with some of the Democratic views on some of the social issues. So I think that particularly in that race, we're going to see a great focus from the Democrats on social issues and trying to sort of pin Ovid LaMontagne down on that. He's quite socially conservative, whereas the Republicans are going to try to keep this about taxes and spending and the role of government. And it was interesting, to Mike's point, that it was less than 10 seconds into Maggie Hassan's first answer to a question. It was about, the differences between you and your opponent, and she took the pledge again. So this is something that, she's obviously hoping will, inoculate her against the charges that, oh, you're a big taxer and spender. Obviously, when it was Ovid LaMontagne's turn, he quickly went at her about spending in Concord, as Herb Thomas said, a majority leader, and the short-lived LLC tax, which was something that was supported a tax on limited liability companies. And so we're going to hear a lot of that going forward, I suspect.
Well, and I want to talk about the governor's race in a couple minutes. But to the congressional races first, gentlemen, and Josh, to you, there's sort of a rerun feel to these congressional races this year.
Well, it's because the same people are taking part in them. Frank Ginta beat Carol Shea Porter by about 25,000 votes last time, a relatively easy win in District 2. Charlie Bass reclaimed the seat he had held for six terms by a much slimmer margin, about 3,500 votes. And both races are looking fairly competitive this time. That's what the polls indicate. And certainly the national groups that help fund these races believe so. They're both seats are considered sort of toss-ups and are getting targeted by a lot of ad spending by the respective campaign organizations out of, the DCCC and the RCCC. A lot of attention. And, again, the differences are probably starker in the first congressional district. And I think that was reflected in the debate than in the second district. But I don't know which one you want to start talking about first, maybe the first district. That was in some ways, the purer distillation of the differences between the parties and also temperamental differences. I mean, that was a fairly fractious encounter on earlier this week.
Well, and let's hear a little bit from that debate. Deep philosophical differences, as you said, Josh Rogers. On this particular question, the government's role in creating an environment that fosters job creation.
Actually, it's interesting that he doesn't think there's a federal role, because what we have been hearing is that we need federal investment in research and development to share with industry faster. The university system has been drastically cut 50% by the state. They are reliant on federal funds for research and development. The community colleges partner, and there is federal money there to partner and to educate.
I didn't say there was no federal role, number one. I said we've got to deal with tax policy, we've got to deal with energy policy, which is a direct impact on manufacturing here in New Hampshire and across the country. But secondly, what you're hearing here from my opponent, government, big government solutions all the time. And I don't think that's necessary.
Again, that's First District Democratic hopeful Carol Shea Porter, followed by the current First District Congressman, Republican Frank Ginta. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR, and today in The Exchange, we're wrapping up 3 days of live debates here on New Hampshire Public Radio. We want to hear from you. If you listen to the debates on radio or watch them on television, what issues jumped out at you as the most important for this campaign year? What was the big takeaway from these forums? And what did you learn, if anything, about these candidates that maybe you didn't know before? Our number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And Mike Cody, to you, as I said, you moved back to New Hampshire after living in Colorado for many years. I'm wondering about the congressional races. What's your impression, Mike? Are you hearing the same talking points here in New Hampshire that you heard in Colorado and maybe even around the country?
Well, I want to bring up this point before I lose. The most striking thing throughout these three debates that I'll always remember is Charlie Bass talking about how he's just really disappointed and tired of hearing this class warfare kind of election year rhetoric. And it was pretty much a, can't we just put that aside and come together as a country? And this came a day before the Mitt Romney flap, and I thought, good luck with that. That's not going to happen in an election year. And certainly coming from Colorado, which is a very similar political landscape to New Hampshire, Colorado is a very fiercely independent state. You have a third Democrat, a third Republican, and a third independent, and it tends to, maybe put some Republicans in Congress and vote a Democratic governor. Very similar to New Hampshire. They have some of the same problems there. They have a university system that also only receives 6% of its funding from the state, yet actually is thriving, but having the same problems with tuition, with not having enough graduating enough students from the state. Colorado has a great high per capita higher education rate among its population, but that's because a lot of people move there.
Yeah, and it does sound like New
Hampshire. New Hampshire has a very similar – people move here, but they've made their way somewhere else. And that struggle, I see that parallel. That's a problem that New Hampshire is going to have to face.
You know, Josh, what about that? We seem to be hearing the same national themes. I'm guessing if you drove, you know, from New Hampshire to California, you'd hear similar themes across the country in these congressional races.
I think that's definitely true. And for Republicans, I mean, they've trying hard to make this a referendum on the health care law they believe that will help them get that is deeply unpopular. That's what we're hearing a lot of, and certainly the role of government. I mean, certainly the Democrats, it's the same thing. I mean, there are, you know, these races have become, you know, they're for national office, but increasingly they are nationalized and, you know, with investments by the national groups, we hear, you know, kind of cookie cutter ads about the various members and how they voted. I mean, certainly in the first congressional district, it's interesting that Carol Shea Porter, I mean, she was the incumbent last time. Ginta beat her, and you know it's a pretty standard ploy. You make the record, you make the race about what your opponent did, and certainly Frank Ginta did that reasonably well last time. I mean, obviously 2010 was a wave election against Democrats in general, but this time Carol Shea Porter's made it pretty clear that this time this is going to be about Frank Ginta's record, and she again and again is trying to link his votes to what she considers extremism among congressional Republicans, and that's the same tack that Democrats are going to be taking across the country, certainly in the second district race too. That's what Annie Custer's doing.
Well, here's an email from Christopher who says, I was struck by the difference in tone between Ms. Shea Porter in the first district and Ms. Custer in the second district. Christopher says Ms. Shea Porter seemed more partisan and argumentative, Ms. Custer more diplomatic and less divisive. Again, that's from Christopher in Manchester. Your quick impressions on that, Mike Cody?
Oh, there was definitely a tone between those, the difference in tone between those two debates. I think on the first debate, you really saw Carol Shea Porter just digging in from the very beginning, and really, you really felt, okay, here's a challenger, and she's just going to rip right into him. And the next with Charlie Bass and Ann Custer, I mean, these are people who have known each other all their lives. There was definitely more of a professional courtesy among them. They did debate well, but it was very polite, and the tone was, I think, you know, even for listeners, I thought it was, you know, it was more enjoyable.
All right. We'll take your calls after a short break. The number 1-800-892-6477. Thanks for that email, Christopher. The address is exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be back in a minute.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and more on 3 days of debates on the exchange on NHPR and at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, confronting the culture of hazing on college campuses. New Hampshire weather today, mostly sunny. Today's highs 60 to 65 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy, chilly. Lows around 30 from the White Mountains north, ranging to around 40 in the Massachusetts border. Then tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, highs 65 to 70 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the New Hampshire Institute of Politics and Political Library at St. Anselm College, New Hampshire's home for politics, online at anselm.edu/NHIOP. And the Altus Investment Group in Concord, helping individuals in central New Hampshire manage their old 401ks and develop a personal retirement plan, online at altusinvest.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, what we learn from this week's forums on the candidates for New Hampshire's highest offices, our two congressional districts and governor. We're looking at some of these ideas and philosophies presented in these debates. And later on, we'll look at where these campaigns go from here. Let's hear from you, too. If you watched on TV or listened on the radio, what was the big takeaway for you from these debates? What issues jumped out at you as the most important for this election? What did you learn about these candidates that maybe you didn't know before? Our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. Our guests are Josh Rogers, Statehouse reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio, and Mike Cody, business editor at the Union Leader and a panelist for all three of our debates. And gentlemen, let's go to our callers now. And first up is Matt in Lebanon. Hi, Matt. Go ahead. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me on. My question is about fact-checking. There were a couple of moments of disagreement and debate, specifically, I think, about in the first district debate where Frank Ginza denied that there were oil and gas subsidies in the Ryan budget that he voted for both times. There was a moment in the gubernatorial debate where Maggie Hassan accused Ovid LaMontagne of signing a pledge that would include deregulating the insurance industry, and he denied even signing the pledge. And I wondered if you all are going to do anything to kind of parse out some of these facts or kind of fill in the gaps between what the candidates are saying about what's true and what's not.
You know,
help the voters sort some of that out a little bit.
Matt, I really appreciate this call. And Mike Cote, on the fly, it's tough sometimes to know what the reality is. But NHPR did, to your first question, Matt, follow up with reporting on the oil and gas subsidies that Frank Ginza said were not in the budget. And we have reported that, in fact, they were in the budget. Talk about that a little bit, Mike, how sometimes people say things and you can't quite fact check it right there on the spot, but you can always follow up later.
Well, and on that follow-up theme, part of the point of these debates is to get the candidates to talk. We may not have at our disposal all of the means to check right then, but we have our colleagues both within our own organizations and other media covering these debates. For example, my colleague John DeStazo at the Union Leader and his story today about the Hassan and LaMontagne debate looked at a couple of things both the candidates said and said, well, hey, here's what they had to answer to, and that may have been glossed over during the debate, where we can get into more detail, where we don't even have the time, even if we did have that. I certainly agree with the caller, though. That's certainly important. But we're able to get these points out there and then go back.
Yeah, and it's part of the whole process. But I appreciate the call. Josh Rogers, the cornerstone pledge that was also a point of contention in yesterday's gubernatorial debate.
Well, the cornerstone pledge, I mean, I'd agree with the caller on the energy industry subsidies. I mean, that one was fairly straightforward. And, it's easy to criticize when you're not actually sitting on the panel or moderating. But one could essentially, one could have pressed into a little bit more about that. On the cornerstone issue, it's a little bit more complicated. Ovid LaMontagne did sign a cornerstone pledge essentially supporting family values issues, saying, repeal of the same-sex marriage law, for instance, limiting abortion. Those are things he signed on to in this pledge. The deregulation of health care that Senator Hassan mentioned was not part of that pledge and is actually part of a platform that was released by Cornerstone after the fact, according to Ovid LaMontagne, without his knowledge. He hadn't seen that. And so there was a slight distinction between what he signed and the subsequent platform that was released by Cornerstone. Interesting, though, on the whole issue of social issues, LaMontagne, he when he ran in 2010 and in all of his previous races, he has really couched his candidacy as one of being the true conservative in the race and, kind of tell it like it is from how he sees it and, staunchly pro-life and, staunchly opposed to same-sex marriage. In this race, yesterday it was interesting when Hassan was pressing him on abortion and said, well, would you sign a law outlawing abortion, I think is how she put it. He said, I support the law of the land, and as governor, essentially Roe versus Wade is not something that's going to be repealed. And he subsequently said that he supports that and has pivoted to saying that that talking about abortion only in terms of either Roe versus Wade on the one hand or, parental notification for on the other hand, which is law in the state. And he said, Maggie Hassan's against that, which is an extreme position. And so – and he wouldn't take questions after the debate directly on where he stood about, say, a waiting period for abortion, which was something that was pending and other efforts to roll that back, which will be interesting to see how this plays out because, he's being a bit more canny about this than he has been in the past. And certainly, Democrats went after him on these things when he ran for governor in 1996 quite successfully. And so it's interesting to see the way in which he's playing what is going to be a sensitive topic for him and one that is not going to go away.
Well, and it was interesting, and Mike, I'm sure you remember this, it was a forum on business and the economy, but former Senator Hassan did try to tie together these social issues with overall economic issues. Let's hear a little bit on that theme.
I should also add that it's really important, as we think about strengthening our economy, that we defend the civil liberties and rights of every New Hampshire citizen, because we want to attract people of talent and energy to our state. So that means defending our marriage equality law and making sure that women can chart their own destiny by making their own health care decisions.
I really don't think that that's relevant at all for this election cycle. Again, as I travel around the state, the focus is jobs, the economy, reforming state government. And that has to be the primary focus now in these times. These are critical times in New Hampshire as well as in this country, where we need leadership that understands that jobs are created in the private sector and what it takes to create that environment for job creation here in New Hampshire.
And again, that's Ovid LaMontagne, Republican candidate for governor. We heard earlier former State Senator Maggie Hassan, the Democratic candidate. The number for you to join us with your thoughts, comments, questions on these three debates that were held live here on NHPR this week is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send us a short email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, before we go back to our listeners, I want to ask you both about a phrase that came up again and again, day after day. And Mike Cody, that's Tea Party. Now, in the governor's debate, Maggie Hassan kept saying, you know, these are the Tea Party ideas. We heard that in Carol Shea Porter's debate with Frank Ginta. We heard that in the Charlie Bass, Anne McClain Custer debate. Has Tea Party, for Democrats anyway, become a dirty word?
It's like being called a tax and spend liberal by a Republican. It's the same thing.
So is it going to damage Republicans this year, or just does it rile up the Democratic base? What do you think?
I think they're just playing to their base. I think that if you're a Republican, I think with Ovid LaMontagne, I think he seems to want to distance himself somewhat, and that social issues aren't a big part of what he's working on. I definitely see that tone with him. And yesterday he made a very strong point of talking about how, you know, we want to care about, we care about everybody.
I want to be governor of all the people.
I think he did a very good job bringing that message home.
You know, when Ovid LaMontagne ran for U.S. Senate, Josh, on the Republican side in the primary, narrowly lost to current Senator Kelly Ayotte, he was often described as the Tea Party favorite in that race. So have things changed?
Well, I mean, the atmosphere has changed. I mean, you can call back to 2010. I mean, Charlie Bass, who's really nobody's definition of a Tea Party, or we can recall when he went out of his way when asked about the Tea Party, saying, you know, God bless all of them because, you know, their agenda is my agenda. You know, certainly that was a segment of the electorate that Republicans were looking to energize last time. And, you know, since then, Democrats are looking to brand all Republicans as, you know, Tea Party stands in for extremist in their view. And that's what they're going for. They're trying to brand every Republican as extremist, you know, and that's, you know, from Mitt Romney on down. I agree with Mike's point about Ovid LaMontagne. It was interesting to watch him distance himself on the whole 47% issue. And
that's Mitt Romney's statement that 40% of the public is looking for a handout and is never going to vote for him.
Yes. And he, you know, he stepped clear of that yesterday. And it will be interesting. I mean, you know, Maggie, the starkest distillation of this came, you know, on the primary night when, you know, Maggie Hassan had this speech where she talked about, you know, the New Hampshire way versus the Tea Party way. And again, that's something that we're going to be hearing a lot of. And it'll be interesting to see how it works out or whether, you know, to Mike's point, whether this, you know, energizes the Democratic base more than it actually affects the swing voters, the small slug of them who could decide these close contests.
And one more question before we go back to our listeners, gentlemen. Again, on this Tea Party label, in the first district, Mike, we heard that a lot also from Democrat Carol Shea Porter toward Frank Ginta, calling it, you know, him the Tea Party favorite and so forth. Mr. Ginta, how did he manage that in your mind, Mike, that label and how he approached it?
I think he deflected it fairly well. I think he really just focused on his business experience. What struck me at one point, though, is when they were talking about, you know, government aid to education, and Mr. Ginta talked a lot about how, well, he didn't his parents put him through school. He didn't take out loans. And that made me wonder, well, there's a lot of people out there who do. And that question seemed to kind of float out there and not really get decided, I think, on his part.
Education was a big, big issue in these races, all three of them, not just the governor's race. Another one that came up a lot was the Affordable Care Act. And boy, Josh, this feels like a rerun from 2010 again, too. In the idea that, you know, Republicans are saying this is going to be a problem, and that theme is going on and on. It hasn't changed.
Well, it'll be interesting to see that, obviously, this was, you know, times change in election, and this is something that we're hearing about. Whether or not this is actually going to move as many voters as both sides presumed remains to be seen. You know, Democrats have been banking on that as the law is implemented and some of the popular provisions in it begin to take effect, you know, that children can maintain on their parents' insurance until they're 26, although that was already law in New Hampshire, the coverage of pre-existing conditions and the like. And, you know, their hope is that if the cost controls in the law seem to make things better, or at least you can argue make things better, that this will pick up steam. And obviously the Supreme Court has ruled that, you know, most of it stands, that this won't be, you know, the Achilles heel that Republicans, you know, assume it is. Certainly in the second congressional district debate, it was interesting to hear them discuss it because it was a little less black and white than the way Republicans and Democrats typically talk about this.
That was real interesting. Mike, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah, and Charlie Bass really looked at, I think, what I thought he struck a theme that businesses certainly think about as the unknown, and that we haven't really seen the effects of this law as it unrolls year after year, and then that's very worrisome because you know change is really you know scary, and we haven't felt the impact yet, and I think that that particular message, I think that resonated well.
And it was interesting because in the first district and on the governor's side, we really heard stark contrasts on this law. A little different in the second district. Let's hear what Charlie Bass and his challenger, Ann McClain Custer, said.
It's the worst possible time to be completely revamping, whether you support the measure or not, the health care system in this country. And I would suggest that one of the quickest ways that we could start this economy turning in the opposite direction would be not to repeal necessarily, although I support that, but to at least defer the implementation of this new health care law, which is a bureaucratic boondoggle, until such time as the unemployment rate gets under control, say down by 2%.
The point is 96% of small businesses have employees under 50, and they won't be impacted at all. And the reality is that the inflation has dropped. The last couple of years, the studies are showing, are down to 2 or 3 or 4% healthcare inflation. What we really need to do is tackle the issue of cost of healthcare, and Congressman Bass has had no solution for that.
Again, that's Ann McClain Custer, Democrat running for New Hampshire's 2nd Congressional District, in a forum with current Republican Congressman Charlie Bass. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, we're wrapping up the three debates that we held this week on the 1st Congressional District, the 2nd Congressional District, and for the first time, the candidates for governor all debated their views. We saw some sharp differences between these candidates all 3 days. We'd like your impressions, questions, and thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Mike Cody, Josh Rogers, let's go back to our listeners. And Roger's calling from Stratum. Hi, Roger. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mitt Romney has an ad up saying that when elected, he'll create 59,000 jobs in New Hampshire. And I'm wondering how the candidates for governor could lay some specificity in that. Given the claim is out there, I think it's a rhetorical claim and a promise that can't be kept. But there it is. The number's there. How would they help create those jobs? Where in which of the 10 counties and what kind of sectors?
Yeah, and Roger, it's a great question. And Mike, this is something we tried to hone in on every single day. What is the role in government in helping to create jobs?
Well, I think that number 59,000 is kind of curious because that's about twice the number of jobs we've lost in this recession over the last few years. And Ovid LaMontagne noted that yesterday. And he talked about how our unemployment rate masks the problems in the northern part of the state. And I think that's really the challenge. We have so many people in the southern part of the state, you know, traveling to Massachusetts and getting good jobs and coming back, and the rural areas are really hurting. I think that will be a challenge for either candidate to come up with a way to to re-energize those parts of the state.
Yeah, and it seemed like, Josh, that each candidate used his or her philosophical views to prove how they would help create jobs. Republicans seem to say through lower taxes, less regulation. Democrats seem to say through a healthy ecosystem, education, good roads, and so forth. Go ahead.
Well, certainly, and in the governor's race, I mean, one other stark divide was on, you know, the question of the right to work. Ovid La Montaigne's a strong supporter of that law, which would essentially prohibit requiring employees to pay a portion of the costs of having unions represent them in collective bargaining. Republicans believe that that would make New Hampshire more attractive to large employers. Maggie Hassan, meanwhile, said that what we need is a workforce that is better trained, and that will require investment in higher education. And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, she also said that, you know, she had this anecdote about sitting next to a corporate recruiter on a plane who talked about how, you know, social issues such as, you know, the same-sex marriage law and having sort of broad abortion rights makes New Hampshire a more attractive place for employers. That seemed a little shoehorned in there, but in any case, that is where she's coming from on that front.
Let's take another call, gentlemen. Roger, thanks for that one. Our number 1-800-892-6477. Up next in Bedford is Kevin. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Well, good morning. Kudos to you for herding the cats so well. Great 3 or 4 days. You did a great job. You know, it highlighted to me why I'm Republican. You know, the Democrats continue to want to offer everything for everyone, and we don't have any way to pay for it. It was a showcase for New Hampshire, though, as far as good debate, a great great radio station putting on a great debate. But the politicians still on both sides of the fence continue to tell me what the other guy isn't saying, and, oh, that drives me crazy.
You want to hear what he's
what
he or she
is
for.
Is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Kevin, you feel like the Democrats promised everything but no way to pay for it. What do you think about the Republicans? I mean, they were making some promises, too.
Yes, and I think, the early guy, the earlier caller about Romney making $49,000 or $59,000, yeah, that's probably just hot air. But, again, I feel like, you know, I call Frank Ginter all the time, and one of his staffers always calls back. It just seems like we have more dialogue, and they're more realistic. Some of the cuts that they're proposing, I think, are outdoors. I don't think we can afford to cut that deep. But, again, what we need to do is get people who can move things to the middle
okay.
and get things done. But
Kevin, thanks for the call.
Special kudos to NPR.
Well, I'm glad you liked it.
Awesome job.
I'm glad you liked it. And real quickly to Mike Cody, we're heading into a break. You know, we did try to get from Democrats, okay, where are you going to pay for this? They had some ideas, not satisfactory to Kevin, but they had some ideas out there about where the money would come from. Maybe we'll pick up on that after a short break. Kevin, thanks for the call. If you want to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page, and we'll be right back.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Raf Young and Pignatelli, celebrating 25 years of innovative client-focused solutions for businesses and nonprofits throughout New England, raflaw.com. And Collins Dentistry for Children, treating the dental needs of infants through teens in southern New Hampshire, with locations in Nashua and Pelham. Details at collinsdentistry.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
On the next Fresh Air, why is our high-speed internet slower and our bills higher than in many other countries? And why is it many Americans don't even have access yet? On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter David K. Johnston about his new book, The Fine Print. Join us for the next Fresh Air, today at 3 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at a week of debates here on NHPR. Over the past 3 days, we held live forums in partnership with the Business and Industry Association, the union leader, and New Hampshire Public Television. We sat down with the candidates for the 1st and 2nd congressional districts, and then yesterday, the candidates for governor debated for the first time. We want your impressions of these debates, what you learned about these candidates, what the big overall takeaway from these forums is for you. Join us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And Mike Cody, to Kevin's question just before the break, he said he's a Republican. He felt like the Democrats said they would do all these initiatives but didn't offer concrete ways to pay for it. What did the congressional Democrats say about that?
Well, certainly the big debate is over restoring the Bush-era tax cuts to people over $250,000 in income, and I think that's the big philosophical debate. Although I think on the Republican side, the comments from both candidates about how really it's a smidgen of it doesn't really bring that much money to the table in terms of deficit reduction, and then the Democrats would have to go elsewhere to get funds.
Yeah, that was a big, big piece of especially the second district debate, wasn't it, Mike? This Bush-era tax cuts for the wealthy or not. We spent quite a bit of time on that.
That and the fiscal cliff and what happens if we have the Bush-era tax cuts and all these automatic, you know, cuts to our economy, to our services. Rather.
The defense spending cuts as part of that fiscal cliff to the automatic cuts, that was an issue because of BAE Systems in Nashua. State's biggest manufacturing employer. On the gubernatorial side, Josh Rogers, former Senator Hassan did hint that she would look at some revenue sources, even though she's against a broad-based income or sales tax.
Well, as we said, she took the pledge again, but the one point of agreement between Hassan and LaMontagne on the revenue front is, you know, both are open about a single casino near the border of Massachusetts. LaMontagne's been clear that he favors it having it being in Rockingham Park. Hassan says, perhaps at Rockingham Park, but perhaps someplace else. On other revenues, though, LaMontagne essentially said, you know, hold the line, no new taxes and fees. Hassan suggests rolling back the 10-cent cut to the tobacco tax that took place in the last state budget. She also talks about hiring more auditors, which she believes will increase collection at the Department of Revenue. And she also said in terms of paying for infrastructure improvements that talking about looking at the gas tax, which, hasn't been increased, I think, since 1992, and also looking at tolls, things that Ovid LaMontagne said he was unwilling to do.
Yeah, I was surprised that she went out on a limb on the gas taxes. That was taboo last time around.
Well, I mean, Governor Lynch, made that kind of a signature thing in one of his races when he faced Jim Coburn in a race that he easily won when Coburn said, oh, we need to have a discussion about the gas tax. You know, Governor Lynch sort of hit him over the head repeatedly with that. Gas tax has been something that that people have been loath to revisit. And, there are a lot of powerful forces in Concord once you start talking about that. But we have a big hole in our highway fund, and there are going to have to be ways to pay for things. And it either has to be, more revenue, doing less, or coming up with a lot of bonding. So this is a tough problem that whomever wins the governor's seat office is going to have to face.
Our phone number again on The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we look back at this week's debates. What moments perhaps struck you the most? What issues concern you the most in these congressional races or the governor's race? And how did you hear those issues addressed in these forums? Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can always post a comment on our Facebook page. Again, that number, 1-800-892-6477. Mike Cody, to you, in the congressional race, as we said, we talked about health care, we talked about the Bush-era taxes, we talked about the fiscal cliff. We also talked about manufacturing, since this was a forum on business and the economy. What did you remember hearing from the congressional candidates on the manufacturing sector? Because it seems like we hear two worldviews on how to help the manufacturing sector as well.
Well, we certainly talked a lot about, again, we talked about this previously in the show, about the skills gap and, you know, particularly in advanced manufacturing, making sure that companies have the workers they need with very specialized skills. And it's not just that there are people out there who have some of the skills, but the companies that we have here, it's more than just a trade kind of a background. You need to have workers quickly and to be able to expand and be competitive. And we also talked about global competitiveness and how to have our manufacturing base both nationally and locally ready to compete globally with the rest of the world.
Yeah, there was some talk about free trade, I think, in these debates and whether it should be free or fair trade. I think that came up in the first congressional district race. And Mike, this is a theme that we've heard before. Again, there's a lot of rerun aspects to this.
Certainly in free trade, we've heard our Democratic candidates talk about how well is that good for New Hampshire workers because losing jobs overseas. And with companies, of course, they want to be able to get the workers they need, get into the markets they need. It's just a very clear philosophical difference.
Yeah, and Josh, in the gubernatorial race and in the congressional races, but especially gubernatorial, education funding as it is related, higher education funding as it is related to this skills gap that Mike mentioned, that came up a lot too.
That did, and there was a bit of a difference between the candidates there. Maggie Hassan has said that she will restore the funding cut in the last budget to higher education. About half the funding was cut. It's not a huge percentage of the overall funding. I mean, New Hampshire lags behind many other states. The most sort of stingy in terms of funding, direct funding from Concord to higher education. She said she's looking to restore that, sees it as essential, and believes that, in exchange for a tuition freeze for 2 years, she could come up with the money. It's sort of unclear how she would come up with the money. I mean, she talks about the tobacco tax. She talks about auditors. Ovid LaMontagne says he would like to restore as much money as he could, but made no hard claims about how much he would or how he would go about doing it, other than he would hope that the university system would also get rid of some of the bureaucracy, which is a theme we hear in Concord out of Republicans there, that portions of the administration become bloated. The chancellor's office was a target among Republicans, particularly in the New Hampshire House. And so I think that if he were in the corner office, we would probably be looking at that. But both candidates did seem to indicate that they understood that education was crucial in terms of New Hampshire having a competitive environment, but a lot fewer specifics out of Ovid LaMontagne on how to pay for it.
Well, and to our earlier caller, Kevin's question again, he said that Democrats didn't offer ways that they would come up with the money for the initiatives that they want to put forward. You know, since you mentioned Ovid LaMontagne, Mike Cody, to you, Mr. LaMontagne said yesterday we could get a lot more money from government efficiency, hundreds of millions perhaps.
Well, we've seen that's a theme we've seen certainly with John Lynch. I mean, he's having a lean summit to talk about efficiencies. I don't know how realistic that is in terms of how much more you can squeeze. We'll certainly see it.
Yeah, it's a theme we've heard before, Josh.
You probably shouldn't run for governor unless you're willing to at least say that you're going to make government more
efficient.
Everybody says that. And some do. And certainly it was a big theme when Craig Benson was governor. There was a big, back to Hugh Gallon, there were various blue ribbon commissions coming up with ways to make government more efficient. Some of those suggestions get implemented. A lot of them sit on the shelf. It will be interesting to see what the next occupant of the corner office is able to do. I don't think there's a great deal, hundreds of millions of dollars that can be squeezed on the efficiency front. Governors say that, and then but we'll see. Republicans now in control in Concord, we'll see what the breakout is after the election. They're going to be looking to revisit this. This is something that they think there's some savings there. So does Ovid LaMontagne.
Mike, did you want to jump back in?
Yeah, we just see a point where when we're in such a tough economic times, how much more efficiencies will you get without really it comes to a point where how are you going to increase revenues? How are you going to promote more business? How are you going to find ways to create funding rather than squeeze a nickel here and there.
Well, and one thing that I thought was an interesting point in the Democratic debate yesterday was when the question was asked about the hepatitis C at Exeter Hospital about whether or not cuts to government had a role there, and you know, Maggie Hassan, it's the first I've heard anyone suggest that that cuts to government may have hindered the state's response. After the debate, she sort of walked that back a little bit and said, you know, the point is basically that, you know, you can't expect cuts to government, cuts to hospitals, not to ultimately have an effect when it comes to, you know, public health and being able to serve the citizenry. Ovid La Montaigne claimed that her charge was reckless and that, she should know better. I mean, both of them have backgrounds as healthcare attorneys, not to jump the gun before all the facts are in. But it was an interesting part of the debate.
Yeah, that got a lot of headlines.
La Montaigne certainly even seemed to have like a visceral response. Like he was he got charged up and turned in his seat and it seemed like it was actually a personal, what was this? Because it did seem a long ways from funding cuts to really decisions that were made and
what happened over there, which is a terrible tragedy for those folks. You know, I want to ask both of you about sort of the overriding theme of these 3 days of debates. Again, we talked about some of the policies and philosophies, but at the bottom of these forums, Mike Cody, was, you know, businesses want certainty. That's what they say. No matter what political side they're coming from, they want certainty. They want to know what's going to happen so that they can make plans. Do you think that business people watching these forums came away with any better sense of things are, you know, shaking out and we'll know soon about how this business climate is going to be?
I think perhaps more in the gubernatorial debate because there were stark differences between the candidates, less so in the congressional, and I think because also that big national picture, it's a lot more complicated and there's only so much two representatives from the state of New Hampshire are going to do that are going to directly impact their lives. But I think that the choices, regardless of what party you're on for the gubernatorial election, very clear.
Yeah, and at least you know where they stand. What about that business uncertainty, Mike, though? Again, you're the business editor at the Union Leader. What do you hear from businesses about that, about what they want from their politicians about creating more certain business environment?
They want to know what's going to happen. I think Charlie Bass, again, talked about how we're just beginning to see the impacts from the healthcare legislation and the ACA, and it's so complicated. No one really, even if you have to spend a lot of time to know what's going to happen in 2013, what's going to happen in 2014, and I doubt a lot of businesses have it that just kind of hits them as it comes, and so they're waiting on the sidelines to see. They're hoping it's some after this election something is going to change. And then whether I think what Charlie Bass was talking about, let's hold off on it. I thought that was an interesting approach because he wasn't saying let's repeal it, let's hold off on it and wait till we're out of this economic mess.
I thought that was interesting too. I hadn't heard that before. He said I favor repeal, but maybe we don't have
let's
to repeal
take a break.
It. I had not heard that before. You know, just looking forward, gentlemen, and it's hard to believe, Josh, that the election is, 5-6 weeks away. Where do you think these congressional candidates are going to take it from here?
Well, it may be reductive to suggest that it's simply going to be more of the same, but I do think that, with the top of the ticket races are going to have a huge effect on what happens down the line, that, it may be tough for them to differentiate themselves from their nominee, and that's fine. That may be fine for some of them. Carol Shea Porter is looking to make this a referendum on Frank Ginta's time in office. We'll see how that pans out. In the second district, it's interesting because a lot of the currents that Democrats are running on, that Republicans are going to take away abortion rights, that this is a war on women, in Democrats' words. Charlie Bass historically has been fairly moderate on those issues. And so, I think that if you talk to people near him, there is some anxiety that, he may be sort of swept up into this, all Republicans are going to take away your abortion rights. I mean, there is a truth that people vote with their party, 90% of the time, and you sort of have to dance with those that brought you. So, this is the way the world works. But there's that current in that race that I think will be interesting to watch. And on the governor's race, you know, it's going to be from Democrats over the LaMontagne, you know, is an extremist. And from Republicans, it's going to be, you know, Maggie Hassan is a big government, wants to make government more part of your lives and is soft on taxes. And, you know, you can't really take her word for it on the pledge. So this is in that race, it'll be very classic in terms of, you know, how Democrats and Republicans choose to run. But, you know, the presidential race, it's close in New Hampshire, and that is going to be giving all these races less oxygen. They have had less oxygen so far. There's likely to be an onslaught of ads in the congressional races and probably in the presidential race. I mean, there's been time already reserved. And so how much voters tune into the particulars of these races is something that that all candidates are thinking about. And for Ovid LaMontagne, we saw this yesterday. He's out to sort of cast himself as being a little different from, you know, how he's traditionally run, and also how he's going to be gubernatorial in terms of looking out for all in New Hampshire, not going to necessarily be with Mitt Romney down the line, even if, you know, LaMontagne's history and beliefs are quite conservative, and Democrats are going to be trying to pick at that from here till Election Day.
Well, I have one last email I'd like to share with you, gentlemen, and this is from Donovan. He says, "The thing I took away from the debates is that the candidates do not understand the meaning of lightning round." That was tough, wasn't it, Mike?
You know, I thought after the after yesterday's debate that the candidates did a better job with a lightning round than we did with their names.
Well, there was a lot of substance, especially in that gubernatorial debate, because the candidates did, they stuck to the time.
They were right on point, and they seemed to really capture the spirit of quick answers and, you know, pithy, quick answers.
I'm not sure Maggie Hassan has a future as a fortune cookie
That was a fortune cookie scroll, I think.
Well, and if you're not sure what we're talking about, you can check in with these forums on nhpr.org, nhptv.org. Also, public television will be airing them tonight and tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. So tune in for that. And again, more information at nhpr.org. Mike Cody, thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Mike Cody, business editor at the Union Leader, a panelist for all three of our debates. Josh Rogers, thank you for making the time.
You're welcome, Laura.
Josh Rogers, Statehouse reporter for us at NHPR. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Samantha Johnson. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.